Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we on stage left in Kathy Lombardi Restaurants in New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. Today I have to talk about something that actually made me mad. I haven't been this mad in a while.
Really? And it's not even at me.
It's not at you, and it's not at, you know, politics. It's not at anything like that.
Do tell, Mark.
I TiVo'd or DVR'd the show Hell's Kitchen. As most of our listeners know, I'm not really a fan of the show. But, you know, I thought, you know, maybe we'll get a kinder, gentler Gordon Ramsay this season. I said, I need to see what's going on.
Let me fill people in who don't know about this show. This is a show. There's a British chef named Gordon Ramsay who also has a restaurant in New York now. Mm-hmm. And it's a reality show where people come in, and supposedly it's in a real restaurant setting, and the winner wins some prize. And it's like Top Chef, only it's not as good.
Well, and there's a good prize. It's a $250,000 executive chef job. And I looked at it. They've made some changes this year. The contestants are all restaurant professionals.
As opposed to prior years where you'd have, like, a housewife, somebody doesn't have a lot of experience. They get thrown into a professional kitchen, and they're like, okay, make a souffle. And
although there are people there with varying degrees of professional. One guy is a cook at like an old folks home.
Mm-hmm.
Another person is a nanny and a personal chef. So varying degrees, and some people are executive chefs of restaurants already.
I wonder who's going to do better.
Nanny,
make a souffle.
I could watch that show right now and tell you who the top three people are going to be.
You know why? You know why?
Because Gordon Ramsay could tell you who the top three people are going to be,
too. Because any idiot could tell you that the nursing home guy is not going to beat out the executive chef of the restaurant.
So the first thing, right off the bat, there are 12 contestants. 9 of them are ridiculous. Get rid of them.
Right.
Okay? Forget about it. But the first thing that happens as I turn this television show on, this cooking show, okay, this reality cooking show, there's a warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
On a cooking show?
TV 14.
Why do you need to be 14 to watch a cooking show?
My 10-year-old is advised to not watch this reality cooking show.
Why is that?
Because, well, for language, okay, Gordon Ramsay is a cursing machine, okay, and he degrades people, and he sits there and calls them stupid donkeys, and
Hey, Mark.
And what's that?
You've worked in kitchens for a long time, right? You worked in restaurants now for, what, 20 years?
You can see some of these people who are restaurant professionals are actually seething as he's screaming and cursing at them and smashing their pot on the floor and throwing stuff around. And
you've worked in restaurants for 20 years, right?
Yes.
You've came up through the ranks just like I did, right? Mm-hmm. What do you do when anybody who in a position of authority in the restaurant calls you a stupid donkey?
That depends. Am I 21 or 41?
21.
Maybe I punch them in the nose. Yeah, that's
30.
I probably leave.
You sure? No.
Come on, I'm trying to give myself some credit here for maturity.
No.
Just the whole premise of the show, okay? I watched this show last night, and like I said, I TiVo'd it, so it's a couple of episodes ahead of me now. And I watched the second episode, and I, by the end of it, okay, now I watch TV sometimes right before I go to bed. I get home late, my wife's already asleep, and I watch TV to relax. I was angry at the end of this show. I thought that he held himself to be such, he should be humiliated at his actions on television. If I ever watched myself and I watched myself on television and I did 10% of the things that he did on television, I would be embarrassed for the rest of my life. You couldn't get me to return to do the show. I would be humiliated. And the people on the show are humiliated as well. And he's humiliating them. He's responsible for all of this. And he may be the greatest cook in the world. I have no respect. How could you do a show like that where you just scream and berate people for a television show? Because it's got to be acting. I've seen the biggest hothead chefs in my life. I've seen them all over the place, and I've never seen anybody treat anybody the way he treats people.
You know, that's the thing I don't get, because when I look at that show, I think it's not just you couldn't run a restaurant that way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can, but I've never seen it. And I've been in a lot of restaurant kitchens, and I have a lot of friends who are chefs and a lot of colleagues who are chefs and restaurateurs. But I have to think that certainly if he's trying to run his restaurant that way in New York, people just don't take that. Mm-hmm. People aren't, and they shouldn't.
The better.
And don't get me wrong. Mark and I came up through 12, 14, 16-hour days. We came up through a period of where we were grueling schedules. We came up through a period of where, in a high, fast-paced kitchen, there is yelling. Sometimes tempers flare. Sometimes things are said that are a little harsh and on the edge. But usually it's like, who was it? Marco Pierre White, who was the British chef, mm-hmm. who under whom Gordon Ramsay trained, who said, who also has a bit of a
reputation. Who's also known for a hothead.
Hothead. But he says, in the heat of a busy service, it's an adrenaline rush and it's the heat of battle, and we yell orders to keep people focused. Now, there are more kitchens these days becoming silent kitchens. The best kitchens I've been in have been all but silent kitchens, where mm-hmm. you barely hear anything but the necessary communication going on. But I can understand, it's like a military operation, says Marco Pierre White, and the chef's voice is heard above everyone's, and there's a pecking order and a hierarchy in the kitchen. But do you know what? When someone in a real, true, busy service collapses, if the fish station collapses, mm-hmm. or if the dessert station collapses, screaming at the dessert guy and making them cry, even if they've done something terribly wrong, terribly stupid, or terribly irresponsible, does not get you through the night. What you need to do is go over there and say, let's get it back together, send some help over to that guy, and let's get through service. And at the end of service, we'll talk about what went wrong.
Right, and you're saying things like, stay focused. You're saying things like, come on, get it together. You're not saying, you stupid donkey, how could you ruin this? You're an idiot. I can't believe... Using all kinds of curse words that he's getting beeped every 20 seconds.
And here's the deal. If Gordon Ramsay is supposed to be the head chef on that show, remember, now mm-hmm. let's compare him with Tom Colicchio, who was the chef host of Top Chef.
Mentor.
He had a mentor role, and mm-hmm. he couldn't, but you could see that he wanted to give people advice. He'd ask them leading questions mm-hmm. that would hopefully help them find the answer into how to make it better and how to get through. Whereas this guy, Gordon Ramsay, and you could see that Colicchio celebrated their successes and was disappointed in their failures.
Mm-hmm.
This guy relishes their failures because it's an opportunity for him to show himself as superior, and their successes are an anticlimax.
I'm going to tell you, I've gotten myself upset again, but I'm not sure I explained exactly why I'm so upset. If this show were showing the worst of what happens in fine dining restaurants, I would say, wow, that really does happen. That's really too bad. But it's not showing the worst of what happens. It is this dramatization, pretend show that's being put on of so-called reality TV that makes my profession and the things that I do look bad.
Right.
And that hurts me, because so much of what the restaurant profession is doing good things, and this show is everything bad about the restaurant and everything bad about TV all rolled into one.
It's disreputable and despicable. We'll be back in just a moment with Nancy Silva, a naturopathic physician, to talk about good, positive, and happy things. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Nancy Silva. She is a licensed naturopathic physician in the state of California, specializing in clinical nutrition, herbal medicine, and lifestyle counseling. She's a member of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians and the California Naturopathic Doctors Association. She has a column in the monthly newsletter localharvest.org, which you've heard us mention on this show and that we read. Her column is Nancy's Nutrition Corner, where she discusses, well, nourishing foods.
Dr. Nancy Silva, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Dr. Silva, will you explain to people what a naturopathic physician is as opposed to a traditional medical doctor? You are actually a licensed doctor. You're licensed to practice medicine in California, but a different type of medicine.
Right. Well, naturopathic physicians practice primary care. So like an MD, we do diagnostic evaluations, exams, that sort of thing. And so our training is very similar. We attend medical school, learn all the anatomy, physiology, all that sort of thing. Where we differ is in the treatment. So we learn about nutrition and herbal medicine, physical therapy, counseling, this sort of thing. And so that's how we approach medical problems. We look at what can we do to affect this person's health with their diet, their lifestyle.
Why don't we take a specific, and I don't want you to reveal a case study, but why don't we take something more specific? Why don't you take some type of how you might diagnose some disorder that might be a mainstream disorder and how you might treat it differently than a mainstream doctor?
Sure. So let's say osteoarthritis. So we would diagnose it in the same way, look at the clinical picture, get some x-rays, say, okay, you have arthritis of your knee. And then what we would do is we would look at the person's diet and lifestyle. So what are they doing that could be promoting or aggravating their arthritis?
Running up and down the stairs in their restaurant all night long.
Right, right. So there's certainly a lot of things you can do as far as helpful things with exercise, and then there's some things that aggravate arthritis. So we would look at that and see where the person was and what we could suggest. And then diet, inflammation is promoted by certain things that we eat.
Like what? Like what?
Well, like animal products. Meats, things with arachidonic acid, so fats are metabolized in the body in different ways. And so when you eat meat, when you eat animals that are high in omega-6, then omega-6 typically promotes the prostaglandins of the 2 series, which are...
You're going to have to go back and tell us what you actually just said.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, well, so let's see. When you eat animal products, which are high in omega-6, fats are metabolized differently in the body. So if you omega-6 goes down the pathway where the end product results in inflammatory products, so prostaglandins of the series 2.
So what you're saying is basically these omega-6 fats are types of which are found in types of foods like meat and animal fats.
Right.
They actually can create inflammation in some of our joints.
Absolutely. Well, they create inflammation in the body in general. So if you have arthritis, going back to our example case, so if you have arthritis and you're eating foods that are high in omega-6, you're going to be promoting inflammation. Whereas if you eat foods that are high in omega-3, like cold water fish, let's say, then you're actually going to promote anti-inflammatory molecules to be produced. So one can manipulate their diet to assist in that whole process, you know, promote anti-inflammation as opposed to promoting inflammation.
So the idea here is that, in essence, that eating wild Alaskan salmon as opposed to eating a big corn-fed steak, you're going to do a lot better. Your arthritis may actually get better eating that salmon as opposed to eating that steak.
It's going to help. It's going to help, definitely. And then there will be other things you can do as well, like glucosamine. So then start looking at supplements. Glucosamine is very well studied and helps with rebuilding of the cartilage. So, you know, one can affect that arthritis in several ways.
Well, I think one of the very interesting things is your column at localharvest.org, which is an organization that promotes buying local produce. You talk about the role of doctor as teacher, and this is an idea of getting a doctor involved in your health before you get sick to keep you from getting sick and treating it from a dietary perspective. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's definitely. Basically, naturopathic physicians spend a lot of time with you. It's not like your typical doctor visit. First office call is an hour and a half, and follow-up visits are typically 45 minutes to an hour. So we sit down, and we explain what's going on. And I think this is key, personally, for my own understanding of things and how I make my choices in life. If I understand the process, then I choose based on that understanding. So yep. I think it's really important for people to understand what exactly is going on in their body, and then they can make their choices out in the world understanding that.
And I think one of the things that we need to point out to people is, you know, Nancy's not doing this because she's not a busy doctor. She's spending all that time with you because it's important to spend that kind of time being educated by your doctor.
And to take a holistic approach rather than to look at a report on a chart that says a certain chemical is too high or too low and then give you a pill with another chemical that counteracts it. It's a matter of finding out why that chemical is too high or too low and changing the root cause.
You know, and
exactly.
When we look at the word holistic, it's got so many, I think in mainstream medicine, has so many derogatory connotations, but holistic, look at the whole problem and try and solve the whole problem.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Nancy Silva, a licensed naturopathic physician. We're going to talk more about food in the next couple of segments. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We're having a lively conversation with Dr. Nancy Silva, a licensed naturopathic physician in the state of California. Dr. Silva, you write about food, and you know, this is a show about food and wine, and you treat illnesses with food, but you also, your column on localharvest.org is something I read all the time, and it's a wealth of information about buying local and whole and real unprocessed foods and what that can do for your body, mostly beneficial things. You did an article on exceptional eggs where you challenged the conventional wisdom that eggs contribute to higher cholesterol levels and heart disease risk. Can you talk to us about good eggs?
Oh, sure. Eggs, well, the concern with eggs was that they are high in cholesterol. You look at the breakdown of an egg, and it is definitely high in cholesterol, but it's been looked at as far as how cholesterol acts in the body. When you eat cholesterol, it actually doesn't contribute to your cholesterol level very much. It's actually fats that do that. So when you eat animal fats in particular, that raises your cholesterol within your blood.
So that's counterintuitive. When we eat cholesterol, that doesn't necessarily raise our cholesterol. It's when we eat fat that our body produces cholesterol from that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so people should not be so concerned about eggs. And do you have any advice for how people should prepare eggs or deal with eggs in their diet?
Yeah. Well, eggs. It's pretty much accepted now that an egg a day is okay. So. That would be one thing. As far as the amount, you know, a few a week is definitely fine and better than fine. Eggs are great. They are full of nutrition. And especially if you get pastured eggs.
Well, that's one of the things that Francis and I like to tell people to do all the time. Make sure you're getting eggs from chickens that are fed chicken food as opposed to some other kind of food stuff. that really changes the way that your egg is.
When you get a really fresh egg from a pasture-raised and naturally fed chicken, I had some just we have in the restaurant, of course, and I had some for breakfast at Hell's Backbone Grill in Boulder, Utah, recently. That we went and visited the chickens, picked up some eggs. The yolk itself is a different color, and you can see that it's healthier for you. We're going to go to the news right now, but afterwards we're going to come back and talk more with Nancy Silva, a licensed naturopathic physician, about what she does and what advice she has on how you can be healthier and tastier in what you eat. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today, we're talking with Nancy Silva. She is a licensed naturopathic physician. She has a column in the monthly newsletter, localharvest.org, called Nancy's Nutrition Corner. You can find out more about that or link right to it through our website at restaurantguysradio.com. And we're talking about food with Dr. Silva.
Nancy, you know, we've been talking about a lot of different foodstuffs and things like that. But what we talked about early in the show, we talked about omega-3s, and we talked about the necessity of omega-3s and how they do good things in our body. Everybody hears about omega-3s, but very few people know what actually the omega-3s are doing in our body and why they're so good for us. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the omega-3s are metabolized in such a way that the end result is that you get anti-inflammatory molecules. So molecules that...
Why would an anti-inflammatory molecule be good for my heart, for instance?
Oh, gosh. You know, inflammation is implicated in all kinds of health conditions, diseases, you know, anywhere from heart disease to arthritis to skin problems, that sort of thing. And so heart disease begins, I mean, coronary artery disease begins with, like, an insult to the coronary artery wall. And then there's an inflammatory process.
An insult. I love you, your physicianary term there. An insult to the coronary wall. You rotten, stinking coronary
wall. Damn you, coronary wall. Damn you. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's actually an injury to the wall from, let's say, an oxidized cholesterol molecule.
Or some harsh words.
Yes, right, harsh words. And so once that injury happens, the inflammatory process begins, and you start to get deposits of platelets, and, you know, the plaque starts to form with the oxidized cholesterol hanging on there and platelets forming, and then this plaque develops. It's kind of more involved than that, but I won't go into all the details.
Okay.
So in that sense, if you eat omega-3s, you promote anti-platelet aggregation. So rather than...
You'll stop that plaque from forming on the inside
of
those
walls. Yeah, would definitely help that reverse that process. The platelets won't be as sticky. They won't be hanging around.
Well, I also think that you just said something that's really important. Reversing the process, not just stopping the process, but actually being able to reverse the process is very important. Now, I guess the next question is, how do I know the difference between good omega-3 and bad omega-6? What do I do?
It's just looking at the foods that you're eating. So omega-3s are found in high amounts.
I mean, we all know wild salmon. I mean, anybody who listens to the show knows that wild salmon is going to be high in omega-3s. But
yeah.
What are other foods that we might not think of as naturally as cold water fish?
Ooh, well, flax.
So flaxseed, which we can buy in supplements, or how could we find flaxseed?
Flaxseed you can find in the store, in the baking section,
mm-hmm.
you know, or in the bulk section if you have one of those.
Okay, but what foods that maybe we might eat every day?
Walnuts?
We'll be able to eat, see more on our grocery shelves.
Walnuts, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a question for you. I like nuts a lot, but I actually really enjoy nuts much more when they're toasted or roasted. If I roast my walnuts, do I do anything to diminish their healthfulness?
Yeah, you're much better off eating your nuts in a raw form.
Darn
and
it!
Keeping them protected.
Darn it!
Keep them in the fridge, yeah. I mean, I know they taste good when they're roasted and salted and all that, but you actually can oxidize the fat and turn it into something good, into some or some turn something good from good to bad.
No, it's actually so, bad for
you've,
me.
You've
when
really
I
just
it, right?
You've really just stopped me from eating the walnuts. The whole walnut addition to my diet just went away.
No,
they're really good raw. They're very tasty that way.
No, but what do I? What happens when we toast those raw nuts? We actually make it a negative thing.
You can oxidize the fats.
And when the fats are oxidized, what do they do to you?
Well, they turn into radicals, and they go around injuring your coronary artery walls.
Those bastards. Sorry.
Yeah, it's amazing how easily you can take a good fat and turn it into something bad, like olive oil, let's say. It's great for you. It's omega-9. But you heat it, and you change it from something good to something bad.
Just like that.
Just
with a little heat.
Yeah.
Now,
those damn cavemen.
You say
if
walnuts.
If they hadn't invented fire, we'd be fine.
Now you say walnuts in particular. Are there nuts that are good for you and nuts that are bad for you?
You know, nuts in general are good for you. Nuts are healthy fats.
But basically raw nuts is what you're saying.
Raw nuts, yes. So walnuts and almonds in particular are very good. They've been shown to raise HDL levels. So those are the two I typically go for. But any kind of nut is typically a good fat, you know.
Okay.
All right, well, let's talk. I want to talk about a food that gets a raw deal, and no pun intended, but a food that a lot of people said for years, well, you know, it's good for you, but it's very high in fat. You really have to be careful with them, and that's avocados.
Oh, yeah, avocados.
Can you talk to us a little bit about avocados? Are they good for us or bad for us?
Oh, I love avocados. They're great. They're high in omega-9s. And omega-9s are excellent. They raise HDL levels and lower LDL levels. Avocados have a lot of nutrients.
Why is omega-9 good for us?
Omega-9, because it raises the HDL, which is the good cholesterol. It's the protective cholesterol, protective to the heart. HDL takes cholesterol away from tissues, as opposed to LDL, where it brings it around and deposits.
And actually, Dr. Silva, I don't know if you realize, but we've been running a controlled study at the bar at Stage Left for the last 10 or 12 years now, and what we found was that the avocados come with usually some sort of salsa or Mexican food that you will often have with a margarita. The margarita lowers stress, and therefore, you know, and you can... I made that up.
We're working. This is a case study. The evidence is only anecdotal to this point.
This is a cocktailopathic physician, Francis Schott's unscientific study.
I like it.
Yeah, it's good. I think margaritas do lower stress in my life anyway.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, alcohol in general is good for you. You know, in moderation.
Talk to us about that.
Oh my. Well, you know, red wine has such a good reputation, and that has to do with the polyphenols, but. Polyphenols are antioxidants, and so anytime you take in antioxidants, you're helping yourself because you're squenching those free radicals we were talking about, and, you know, you're just doing yourself a favor as far as avoiding injury to your coronary arteries and that sort of thing.
But is it only red wine?
No, actually all alcohol has the polyphenols. Just red wine is the most concentrated.
I think that one of the areas that we miss when we talk about people having a drink or relaxing and going out is the effect that taking a few minutes to sit down and just relax and contemplate your day and maybe have a conversation with the person sitting across from you and having a drink and the fact that you're slowing your heart rate down and you're taking it easy and you're reducing stress, that plays into this equation as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, definitely. You know, it's like form of meditation almost, right?
Well, you know, there are a number of folks who are in the anti-alcohol camp who are promoting grape juice now as having all of the beneficial qualities, all the antioxidants of red wine. In unfermented grape juice, do we find as many antioxidants in wine, or does alcohol part of the equation that makes red wine a valuable diet part of your diet?
Wow, that's a really good question. I don't know. I have not looked into that. Yeah. That really takes fun out of it.
I think that's indeed where we're sure that it's part of the equation.
Freeze the grape juice.
Yes.
In that it takes the fun out of
freeze,
it.
Freeze the grape juice and give it to your kid an ice pop. I'll take the glass of red wine.
There you go.
You know, when I said this, very similar to this just a minute ago, I think the fun, though, is part of it. I think having fun, I think relaxing, taking some time away from your busy day is part of the equation, needs to be part of the equation. And when we don't sit back and we don't take time to smell the roses, as it were, or smell the red burgundy, whichever the case may be, I think that you're more likely to have high blood pressure. You're more likely to not be as healthy as you would be if you took a couple minutes and didn't stress about, well, I can never have a drink. You might be more healthy.
We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Dr. Nancy Silva about nutrition and what's good for you before you get sick, and maybe we'll talk after the break a little about what you can do to modify your diet at home to give yourself a healthier lifestyle. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightsonnine.com. That's lightsonthenumber9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, and we're here with Nancy Silva, a licensed naturopathic physician in California. Her column appears at localharvest.org. It's called Nancy's Nutrition Corner. Dr. Silva, there are some things that, you know, I think everyone realizes. You know, I go to my doctor and he says, okay, Francis, you need to exercise more, eat less fatty food, and have more vegetables. I'm like, and I pay you for this? I mean, you know. But so there are some things that we know we don't do, and you know, I'm overweight for a reason. But are there things that people may not be aware of, or most Americans aren't aware of, that are deficient in their diet other than eat less fat, exercise more, eat less? What are some things that maybe people might not be aware of that you as a naturopathic physician see that we really have as a deficiency?
Oh, wow. I think we're just deficient in general, you know. I mean, really, none of us are taking in the recommended 5 to 7 vegetables and fruits a day, right?
I do find that a lot of people that I talk to are indeed deficient.
Yeah. In so many ways. But it's 5 to 7 recommended servings of fruits or vegetables a day.
Right.
And that's for a lot of reasons. I mean,
how does the average American do that, though? And I want to talk to you seriously. Francis and I have the great good fortune of spending our lives in a restaurant. But I'll tell you, even I'm in a building surrounded with great food, and yet sometimes I'm eating on the run. I'm eating in 45 seconds. I'm eating in a meal in 6 minutes. How does the average American get those 5 to 7 foods? How do you do that?
I know. It's tough. It's really, really tough. You have to plan ahead a little bit. You know, you have to, when you go to the store, buy those things, have those things in your fridge, and have containers where you can take them along with you quickly. It has to be something that's easy to throw into a container and take in your car. And then, you know, when you go to the restaurant, make those good choices, get the huge salad and then the small thing of fish. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I don't know. I've never been to a restaurant where they actually have a plate that is designed to be the ideal healthy plate, which should be half of it is vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a little quarter of starch and a quarter of protein. Yeah, so it's difficult.
I'm going to tell you, as a restaurant owner, that's not how America eats, and that's certainly not what they want to see when they go to an expensive restaurant.
No, absolutely not. And that's the difficulty, raising people's awareness and getting those changes out there. But in the meantime, people who are trying to make those changes in their lives just have to, you know where that little local market is to stop at on the way to work and pick up that salad, or, you know, making it to where it fits into your lifestyle. You can bring those things along, or you can make the choices when you're out there.
You know, the other thing I find is that there are fruits that are very convenient. And I find that if I have the forethought and the ability to buy a whole bunch of grapes that week and then rinse them off, and, you know, I don't put them in the refrigerator, that I may lose them a day or two sooner. But if I have the grapes on the counter, I'll grab at them and pick at them. And that's sort of, I need to put myself in proximity to it. But, you know, that stuff goes bad. And the fact of the matter is, look, processed food that's not as good for you is a lot more convenient. That Pop-Tart you put in your car last week, if you find it, you know, under the seat this week, you can have it. You know, it's in a sealed container and nothing bad.
Whereas the apple just made your car smell bad.
Exactly.
I know, it's true. And that's why I say you've got to kind of think about it and plan ahead. I used to have frozen blackberries in my fridge all the time, or blueberries or strawberries, some kind of a berry. Berries
my,
are
my
great.
Kids actually freeze grapes. Francis was talking about it. My kids freeze grapes, and they eat them like candy.
There you go. So you've got them frozen in there. You can pull them out any old morning and throw them on your oatmeal, or take them with you, or put them in a smoothie. If you have all the ingredients there and you've set it up to where you can throw it together in 2 minutes, then you don't really have those problems.
And it's true that putting something like that in the freezer and keeping it, getting it icy cold, you stick it in your car. Well, even after 3 hours in your car, something that was a grape or a berry or something that was frozen is still going to have some cool to it, unless it's a 110 degree day.
Oh yeah, you could definitely carry it around pretty much all day, and it would be fine.
But again, I find one of the things that's convenient is where do dried fruits fall into the category of what's healthy for you and what's not? Because one of the things that I do to try and get at least some fruits into my diet early in the day is I keep dried fruits, either raisins or dried peaches or pears or apricots, in my cabinet, and I throw them on my cereal in the morning. Am I doing any good, or do the dried fruits lose a lot of the nutritional value?
You know, as far as I know, they maintain it. They keep it. But I have not researched that, but I've never heard that they don't.
I finally got one thing right. I can't believe it. Yeah, I haven't felt good about myself this whole interview, but finally, on my grape nuts in the morning, which are made from whole grain.
I keep toasting my nuts. I've ruined them.
It's all about just thinking about it, you know, raising that awareness and making a better choice each day, each week, whatever, and it grows from there, you know.
Well, Dr. Silva, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on our show. It's been a pleasure to have you. You've given us a lot of great information for us and for our audience to maybe eat better and eat well.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
If you want to find out more about Nancy's column, Nancy's Nutrition Corner in localharvest.org, you can either just go right to localharvest.org. Or if you can't remember that because you don't have enough nutrition to keep your brain firing on all on all cylinders, you can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll link you there. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We were talking with Nancy Silva. She is, if you tune in late, she's a licensed naturopathic physician. A naturopathic physician is a different type of physician. They don't license them in all 50 states. They are licensed in California and several others. We had another naturopathic physician on our show last year, Dr. Ron Schmid, whose specialty is raw milk. And what these guys do is they look first at your diet. And you know what? That totally makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is sick, well, the first thing you look at is their environment, their diet, their stress level, and what they do every day. And it's not to measure the chemicals in your blood, and if one chemical is different, give you a pill to counteract it. Now, I'm not dissing Western medicine. Western medicine has a lot to offer.
But I think sometimes when you look at, okay, I'm going to solve this problem by having you ingest something. I mean, that's how we solve most of our...
Having you ingest
a chemical.
Rather than a whole food.
Right. But let's face it, all of our foods have different chemicals in them.
Right.
They all have certain qualities to them. So why not look and say, you know what? Part of what you need exists in an apple.
Right.
Why don't you try having more apples?
Why don't you have three apples a day?
And you know what? Apples aren't the answer to everything. Wild salmon isn't the answer to everything.
Right.
And I think that Francis and I take a pretty centric view here in that...
Centrist?
Yeah, that's what I said. Centrist view here in that, you know what? I'm perfectly willing to take the medicine if the other things aren't working. If I if something's gone wrong with my body and I it's time for me to take
and,
whatever the case may be.
And remember,
but at the same time, if I can solve it with an apple or with wild salmon or with some of those other things that I ingest every day, especially if they taste good, then why?
And remember, in traditional Western pharmaceutical medicine, and Western pharmaceuticals have brought us a lot of wonderful things, but in pharmaceutical medicine, the research is done on things that you can patent.
Mm-hmm.
And what naturopathic physicians do is they look at the world of things, regardless of whether they're patentable or not, to say, you know what, why don't you try this? Because if they found out that, you know, certain parts, certain elements in regular food can cure a disease, well, there's no money in really isolating and researching that if you can't get a patent on it.
Because somebody else can sell you a carrot.
Exactly. So I spend $1 million to figure out that carrots work, and then you go buy carrots. You don't have to pay me ever again. So, and I don't think there's anything evil about that, but it is a paradigm you need to be aware of, and that's why a lot of people are looking outside traditional Western pharmaceutical medicine for other answers as well. Hey, listen, I hope you found the show informative today. I know that we did. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1415. The time is 12.